Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 543, coming to you on Wednesday, June 12th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including some recruiting news. Take a look around the web about the latest stuff that is being written about the Trojans, and get to know the Minnesota Golden Gophers this week in our Big Ten Minutes. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rant of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rant of Troy, email address rantoftroy@fansite.com, and our phone number 818-643-7227.
Suck it, West Bruin Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, along with my co-host here in the Rant of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. I am so excited because, Alicia, we've got something up and ready for everybody here.
We do.
We do. And it is so exciting to the point that we just can't wait to unveil it, folks. At long last, welcome the Jesse Cam.
the camera shy Jesse Cam who won't go lay on her bed that she spent all day laying on. So we have to trick her with some treats. So here's a new game. Just to spoil our dog, maybe we'll give her a treat every time we get a super chat.
There you go. Maybe that'll be the thing. It's a Jesse chat instead of a super chat. Maybe, I don't know. we'll see if she actually gets into.
I swear to God, the entire day I've been sitting at this desk working, and she's been laying in that bed looking perfectly framed for the camera. And the moment we set the tripod down with an actual camera there, she's like, "Nah, I'm good. This is the last place I want to lay down." So, yeah.
if you're listening to this on Apple Podcast, there is now a image of Jesse's bed that is empty because she has left it.
All right, we got a super chat from Tim in LA, so Jesse's got more treats coming to her.
Just throw the treats, and here she goes, feeding over on treats.
Yeah, I need to get better at aiming it so that I'm not just like throwing it off in front of the bed, so that you guys can actually like see her.
See the bad part about putting the camera right where it is.
Just nice Jesse butt.
We're going to get butthole view in just like any second, which is going to be great and probably demonetize us here on YouTube. But anyways, folks, welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio. We're super excited to have you here this week. As always, let's talk about what's going on in the world of sports, because you know. You talk about when is Jesse going to be on the camera, right? That's one of the things that we want to talk about in this episode. But also, you know, when are you guys going to join DraftKings? Because they're supporting this episode. So, SC fans, DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. They're offering a no-sweat bet sign-up for new users. New customers who sign up with the code Reign of Troy and deposit at least $5 will receive a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 bonus on their first wager. This means if you place a bet of $50 and you lose, you'll receive a $50 credit and bonus bet straight to your account up to $1,500. You'll also receive one single game parlay reward every day. So using our code Reign of Troy during the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals not only gets you these bonuses, but it helps directly support this very podcast. If you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Reign of Troy, all one word, to maximize your first bet. Of course, this offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. All right, Alicia, we got a bunch to get to here in this episode. So let's start with the news, shall we?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Let's start with a big recruiting weekend that the Trojans had over at the Coliseum. Three fight on emojis, three different tweets of fight on emojis were posted, which would suggest three commitments. But Alicia, only one of them is public. That's a commitment from four-star edge Hayden Lowe out of Oaks Christian, 6'4", 250 pounder. He currently ranks 242 in the 24/7 sports composite, just inside that top 24/7. As the number 19th edge rusher in the country, he picks the Trojans over Miami, Oregon, Texas, and UCLA. Tell me about Hayden Lowe.
Yeah, he called himself a hometown boy who's staying home, and I think that's what makes this one really important, is that USC had given up ground in local recruiting at times, certainly along the defensive line. And it's nice to see USC go out there and pick up a guy from a program that USC should be getting their pick of players from and haven't necessarily had that happen over the last couple of years. So when you're taking a prototypical edge rusher with great pass rushing moves already, with a build that can put on size, a potentially impact player, and you're getting him over, you know, Oregon and Texas, that's big, because USC has lost a whole lot of these kinds of guys to Oregon specifically.
Right.
So I think it's a really good sign. Hopefully it's just one of a few revealed commitments that come out from this weekend, from these last two weekends. But he had a couple quotes that he told 24/7 Sports that I just think speak to not just his mindset, but also perhaps a changing mindset defensively for USC going forward. So he really credited Eric Henderson, the defensive line coach, for getting him in there and giving him perspective on what USC intends to be doing on the defensive line. And this is what he said: I want to be a Heisman winner in college as a defensive player, and I feel like that's something I can do at USC. For somebody to be saying that after the defenses that USC has fielded in the past couple of years, mm-hmm. that really is a big shift and speaks to the recruiting power that that Eric Henderson has been able to achieve. I think one of the other quotes that he told 24/7 Sports that really stood out to me has more to do with USC as a program, which is his impression of USC when he was there at spring. He said, "I saw a lot of grit. The whole atmosphere changed up there. They don't really go into the portal anymore. I went to their practices in the spring and everything surrounding the team changed. They have a whole new defensive staff and brought in the defensive coordinator from UCLA." And, you know, I think we have to beware of falling into the trap of, you know, every offseason, every program talks about how we've got a new mindset and every player is in the best shape of their life and every mm-hmm. player is ready to make a
best spring they've ever
yeah,
seen.
Best spring they've ever had, all of that. So we have to be careful not to overreact to these kinds of things, but it is the kind, like if you weren't hearing these kinds of things, the absence of these kinds of things might be a problem. It's the Hounds of Baskerville sort of situation. Like, yeah, we can't necessarily take these kinds of comments as gospel, but the fact that they're there at least says that it's not completely lacking in that department, which is better than it was, I think. So I'm taking this as a huge positive. I think there are positives from the recruiting element, obviously, just he's a good player with really good prospects, but also the things he said about the program, about the coaching staff, about the recruiting is what you want to be hearing in June. And I don't know that we've necessarily been able to talk like this in the last few years.
Yeah, of course, like with all recruiting staffs and recruiting classes, it's going to, when it comes to the summer, it's going to, it all comes with the caveat of let's see how the class lands, right? Like, you know, we all lived through the year of 2012, the 2013 recruiting class where SC was getting a 5-star commitment every day. Mm-hmm. And that class didn't land. This one, it's going to, you know, have a lot to do with what SC can do in the fall. But it's a good sign that SC is able to start building that culture, especially coming off of a season in which SC fell flat on their face and got punched in the face, right? Like, mm-hmm. they've got to find a way to rebound, especially in the recruiting game. And you got to start somewhere. And getting someone like Hayden Lowe is definitely someplace to start. Other recruiting news, 3-star running back commit, Riley Wormley out of South Lake Carroll. By the way, South Lake Carroll, who's your favorite dragon of all time?
I don't. Do I have one?
Should I don't know.
I have
do you?
One? I.
Chase Daniel?
Sure, let's go
Kenny
there.
Kenny Trill? I don't. Quinn Ewers?
Sure. Let's go. I'm not
Lil Jordan Humphrey.
I'm not like attached to any of those players. So I
just
know.
Love a dragon named Wormley. That's that's pretty good. Anyways, Riley Wormley, South Lake Herald Dragon, has shut down his recruitment after his visit over the weekend. And 4-star linebacker Max Granville has credited Taylor Mays to sort of be a vital role in the recruiting game. This is, comes via Connor Morissette, who says the highlight of the visit was a presentation from Taylor Mays, who talked about all the NFL players that come through there and the advantages that come with going to USC and trying to make the NFL. Taylor Mays, of course, knows all about that as someone who started SC and then played in the NFL for several years.
Yeah, and you know, we've spent a lot of time talking for the past decade about the curse of USC sort of incestuous relationship with itself, you know, always hiring guys who played at USC or have the USC connection and how that doesn't always work out. But I think that one area where you can lean on that is with recruiting staff, because somebody like Taylor Mays is the prime example of what you can be as a player at USC, what you can be going into the NFL at USC, and just any USC player that made it to the league is a really good example of somebody who can come back and say, yeah, like if you want to go to the NFL, then USC is going to make sure that you get there. And Taylor Mays in particular has gotten a lot of credit from a lot of people coming out now about how he has been a bit of a force on the recruiting trail, which is absolutely necessary. USC needs every heavy hitter they can get defensively in terms of recruiting. And it's kind of cool that one of those heavy hitters is coming from, you know, a former Trojan legend. USC lost one of those guys on the offensive line. Vianne Telemavau was somebody who people raved about as a recruiter for USC, and he's now he's at Washington, I think. You know, those are the guys that you want to see USC bring back,
mm-hmm.
bring in as GAs.
And they know the fight assistants. Song.
They know the fight song, and a little bit more than that.
Yeah, 100%. Let's talk about some not so good news, some sad news. A couple of rest in pieces. They say deaths unfortunately come in threes. We've got two here to discuss, which sort of makes me a little worried. Who could be number three?
Well, I think we've already had the third.
Who's the third?
Well, Bill Walton.
It's been a few weeks.
It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, but
it's been a week.
Jerry West passed away today, of course. The architects of the Lakers dynasties, the logo, NBA champion himself out of West Virginia. Sad moment for the sport of basketball, but sports in general. But also this week was the... We lost Quebec, Jake Olson's guide dog.
Yeah, the bestest boy. I think with Jerry West, it's just like a legend of the game. And I think the shock there is that, same with Bill Walton, I didn't know that they were even in the range of being, mm-hmm. of passing on. So it was sort of shocking, and you think about their legacy, and you think about what they've done for sports that we all love, and you absolutely sort of think about that. With Quebec, it's like, you know, he's been part of our lives for a long time because Jake Olson has been part of our lives for a long time, and you right. and I are dog lovers. I mean, we have the Jesse cam, we have Jesse around, and I just I think it's hard because people hear like a dog died, and like, you know, you shouldn't care as much about a dog dying as a human. But like, dogs are our friends, they're our buddies, they're unconditionally loving of us. I get Jesse in the Jesse cam. And you know, it's something that I remember when my childhood dog passed away, and it was devastating for me. I'd spent 17 years with that dog.
Yeah.
More than half of my life at that time with that dog. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. And I think that's what Jake Olson is going through. So he's definitely in our thoughts. It's okay to mourn your dogs. Like, they mean a lot to us, and that's okay.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the relationship that we as, you know, able-bodied people, as weird as that is to say, our relationship with our dog is very strong, right? But you can only imagine how much stronger it is when you're someone like Jake, who relies on your dog for sort of everything, right? Like, so it's a bummer there. Our thoughts are with Jake and his family and Quebec. No word on what the Jake's next dog is going to be, if it's Alberta, maybe.
Edmonton.
Edmonton's a city. That's not a province.
Oh, okay.
Maybe Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia is a good.
New Brunswick.
Yeah.
Yeah. anyways, let's get to everyone's not so favorite topic, because we're going to talk about the Big Ten minute in a few minutes, but. Let's go around the horn and talk about the latest USC football news in terms of what's being said around the country. ESPN has a article out talking about NFL draft sleepers, and Woody Marks was named on that list. Quote, "When you do your workout warrior list, Marks should be on it," an AFC scouting director said. "He might be the fastest running back in college football."
This is music to my ears. Absolutely music to my ears. I think that USC coming in at running back, the USC has been able to find a new running back to feature in the offense every year.
He makes me drool.
Through the transfer portal. And, you know, Marshawn Lloyd came in and was awesome. Travis Dye came in and was awesome. Austin Jones came in and was reliable. And, you know, USC is in an unknown space here again. Where
Ingram was great.
Keontae Ingram was great, too. Yeah, good point out. This year, it's a little bit more uncertain because you have Quentin Joyner, you have Amarian Peterson, you have guys who have been recruited who you think could be something, but you don't know for sure what they're capable of yet in terms of a full-time role. And you bring in Woody Marks, who, kind of like Marshawn Lloyd, is more potential than production at this point in his career. Marshawn Lloyd, because of injuries, hadn't really been super productive, and he came and showed that he could do that at USC. And Woody Marks hasn't reached the peak of what he can do in college. And knowing that he's already getting this kind of talk from NFL scouts just makes you even more excited to see him out there and doing his thing and contributing in all sorts of ways in the passing game, as a runner between the tackles, all of that. Mm-hmm. It should be a lot of fun to see him out there.
Yeah. Plus, his name is Woody Marks. It's a good name. Marks. It's a hell of a name. We'll see what happens for him. He should be someone who can break out on the offensive side of the things. But talking about breakout candidates, PFF, Pro Football Focus, put out their list of breakout candidates, and Miller Moss was named. Quote, Moss has been quietly waiting in the wings for his opportunity at USC, and now that the opportunity will come, the now redshirt junior was exceptional every time he stepped in the field last fall, finishing with a 90.7 PFF grade on 66 dropbacks. He recorded 80.6% adjusted completion percentage and put up a 91.7 PFF grade against the Blitz. Moss lit up his bowl game, going 23 of 33 for 372 yards, 6 TDs, and 3 big-time throws, and just one turnover-worthy play. Alicia, where does Miller Moss stand for you on the list of breakout candidates for the Trojans this year?
I think he's got to be number one, to be honest. And I think that just has to do with the trends. We've talked about this a lot, about Lincoln Riley quarterbacks just do really well. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, Miller Moss, even without the Holiday Bowl explosion, if he was the one who won that starting job and got that nod of approval from Lincoln Riley, you would just look at him and say, okay, he's Lincoln Riley's quarterback. He's going to be quite good. The question for Miller Moss is he like top half of the Big Ten good, or is he, you know, top 15 nationally good? And I think that's one of the big questions that USC has going into this season is Miller Moss just going to be fine, or can he really elevate this offense to the degree that we've seen other quarterbacks under Lincoln Riley be able to elevate the offense? But when it comes down to like the surest thing in terms of having a breakout, because USC doesn't have an established quarterback, yeah, I just would say whoever was going to be quarterback for USC will be, if Jaden Maiava ends up winning the job at some point or taking over, he's going to be the breakout guy, just because of what we know about Lincoln Riley's offense.
Yeah, I don't like naming a quarterback a breakout star team, because it is too obvious. There's only one quarterback that can start at any given time, right? So it obviously would be whoever the quarterback is most likely to be that star. If it's someone who, you know, if Moss wins the job and Maiava comes out and takes the job away from him, you know, 3 weeks into the season, like Sam Darnold did in 2016, then maybe he's the breakout star, right? Like, I think maybe that's the pathway to be a breakout star for either one of these quarterbacks, maybe even doesn't win the quarterback job, right? But I think for me, when I'm looking at breakout stars on this roster on offense, I think it's one of the skill position guys at receiver. There's so many guys at SC lost. When you talk about Taj Washington, Brendan Rice, Dorian Singer, Mario Williams, all those guys are gone, which means there's a lot of catches to go around that need to be replaced. And who's catching those balls? I think one of Jacoby Lane, Mekhi Lemon, and Kyron Hudson are going to be guys who take a huge step forward. We know that Zachariah Branch is probably going to be the number one receiver for SC. if not in terms of production, at least in terms of eyeballs, right? But I think someone else has got to be there to catch a lot of balls. Lane, Lemon, and Hudson all look good in Holiday Bowl. Hudson looked good all throughout last year when he got opportunities. I think he might be the most, guy who can fill in the Taj Washington role the easiest, because he's just so, steady and sort of that possession guy and can just kind of fit in that role nice and smoothly. But either way, I think one of those three guys will be the breakout guy to hopefully become a household name for USC on offense, because someone's going to have the production, right?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And for me, I agree with HR picking stuff in the chat. It's Jacoby Lane for me, if I had to pick one. I think that kid just has star written all over him. Every time I see him out there, I just feel like this guy is just going to be something really special for USC when he's able to take on a sort of a full-time featured role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the year for him. Zachariah Branch, it's hard to call him a breakout, like you said, because he sort of already has, recognition. But Jacoby Lane could be an absolutely like national level receiving star for USC going forward. And one of the things that I like about this receiving core is, like, I say that and I'm quite confident about it. But at the same time, like, I could see, it wouldn't be a huge shock for any of these guys to come out and be big name guys. Like, we haven't even mentioned Deuce Robinson. You mentioned Kyron Hudson and Mekhi Lemon. Jane Richardson, the transfer. Mm-hmm. The other transfer from San Jose State, whose name I'm forgetting at the moment, but all of these guys. Xavier Jordan, incoming freshman.
Ross, right?
Charles Ross, the transfer from San Jose State, and then Xavier Jordan, the freshman who everyone said looked really legitimately good. That whole receiving core, I don't know exactly how it's going to shake out. I think Jacoby Lane will be at the front of the line there personally, but any of those guys could be at the front of the line there. And that's kind of exciting. That's something that's.
Have we talked about the numbers? I feel like, did we?
The jersey numbers? Or
yeah, because Jacoby Lane's got the number 8 now, and I like that.
I love that number for him.
It's a 6'4 guy. He kind of feels like he could be the Dwayne Jarrett proxy, kind of built like Dwayne Jarrett.
It's funny because, like, Deuce Robinson has the number 2, and he doesn't feel like a number two, but also his name is Deuce.
His name is Deuce. Of course he's the number two. He's got to be number 2.
But like that's sort of but that's also a good like receiver number in USC lore. Zachariah Branch with the number 1. Jacoby Lane.
Woody Marks wearing number 4.
Yeah, that's number 4. Kyron Hudson in the 10 has always been good.
Who's your favorite USC running back to wear number 4?
Joe McKnight
or Soltau McCullough?
Joe McKnight, but that's just more my time.
I think the both of them equal for me.
So good number vibes from that receiver core, definitely, and. That's kind of why I'm not stressing USC's receiver room.
Yeah.
In a way that I have stressed USC's receiver rooms in the past. It's not like I'm not capable of stressing the receiver room. I have had years where I was stressing the receiver room and everyone else was like, oh, it's going to be so good. And I was like, well, there's no depth there, guys, and injuries happen. And what do you do? And, that's always on my mind. But for some reason, I have a lot of zen thinking about this room. I think it's going to shake out just fine. I think these guys are capable.
It's the opposite of last year, where last year it was blind optimism and confidence in the receivers, and they didn't perform as well as you would have liked. And then this year, it's you're just going in with the sort of the optimistic view of it. Yeah. The optimistic view when there isn't necessarily a reason to be overly up.
Yeah.
Like, not saying that there isn't a reason, but like.
No, but like there's less reason than last year because the guys last year actually had production. There's very little production here, actually.
Right.
And for some reason, I just like, I don't think that's a barrier to success here.
Greg in the chat says, so Deuce and Jacoby in the next could be the next Steve Smith and Dwayne Jarrett. They could be in terms of production. Juice Robinson, the anti-Steve Smith in every shape and way.
Not in a bad way, just like in terms of like physical profile.
Yes. If you haven't already, we put out a video over the weekend ranking the best USC wide receivers. One of the most fun things I think we've put together. It's going to be a thing that we do going forward, is making, you know, regular mainline YouTube videos. So go check out. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. If you're not subscribed right now, we'll pause a second. Hit the little button right down there. Yeah, there you go.
Hit the like.
Yeah, hit the like on the video too. But subscribe so you can get all those videos. But in that video, we talked about the number two legacy, right? Like, the number two legacy for me is, it's a kind of receiver. It is the precision route runner, possession guy, right? Like, it was Kerry Colbert. It was Kareem Kelly. Sorry, wrong K.
Other K's, yeah.
It was Kareem Kelly. Then it was Steve Smith. Then it was Robert Woods. And those three number twos, I think each one got better as they went along.
Mm-hmm.
And each one sort of got more accolades as they went along too. And the last two put themselves on the All-American wall. They all put themselves in USC record books for something. And they all played a similar style of football, which is sort of different than, say, the number one, which is the big guy, right? Which is, you know, Mike Williams, and then it was Patrick Turner, even though maybe Dwayne Jarrett was more of that number one kind of guy. But either way, Deuce Robinson, not the number two, but he can be as productive as those other number twos. We'll have to see that going forward. Let's talk about defense. Who's your breakout star on defense this year? Because I've got one, and I'm curious of yours.
So I am taking breakout star as being known more on a national level, like somebody who could be mentioned.
So you're saying Jalen Smith?
I'm saying Jalen Smith.
Okay. All right. I was going to say, because like he was SC's breakout star last year.
I'm going to say, yeah. So like I was trying to preface it specifically because like, am I cheating a little bit? Yes, because USC
fans. Not as much as a quarterback, I think, though.
USC fans should already know Jalen Smith. Like he was, I think, far and away USC's best defensive player last year.
Yeah.
On a terrible defense, he was actually quite good.
He was
good.
Him or Bear, yeah.
Yeah. He was even more consistently good than Bear, which says a lot. But for me, it's about when. It's hard, too, with this defense because so many transfers are coming in. Like, I think the first game of the season when USC plays LSU and the broadcast is sort of giving the introduction on what's going on with USC's defense, they're going to mention Kamari Ramsey. They're going to mention Easton Mascarenhas-Arnold. They're going to mention, you know, Akili Arnold and DeCarlos Nicholson and John Humphrey and, like, those, the transfers in. I think they're not going to mention someone like Jalen Smith. I think by halfway through the season, when you get to talking about USC's defense, you're going to be talking about Jalen Smith first as key playmaker, sets the tone on the defense. And, you know, I might, if I'm wrong about that, I feel confident that I will be wrong about that because Kamari Ramsey is so good that you have to talk about him first, or that Bear Alexander is so good that you have to talk about him first, and that wouldn't be a bad thing. But I think that Jalen Smith is going to be the thing, the guy who makes this defense tick over in a positive way that he hasn't been able to do playing on a bad defense recently. So he's my sort of, I'm cheating breakout star. But when I say breakout star, I mean recognized on a national level.
Yeah, I get that. Last year, 75 tackles, 5.5 for loss, started 12 games at safety. And I think that, you know, he had a very strong season last year. And then this year, I think he can only get better, hopefully, in a system that sort of works out for him to be better rather than just being the cleanup guy on the back end of the defense. Mine on defense is going to be Jamil Muhammad. And shout out
to the chat agrees with you on that one.
To the guys in the chat for throwing that in there, too. Because someone's got, we've talked about it before, and maybe it's lazy when talking about Danton Lynn's defense. You got to have someone who's productive in the backfield like Leatu Latu or the Murphy twins, right? That's what UCLA had up front last year. Those are the guys who had a ton of TFLs. Well, who's going to get those TFLs on this team? I think the most likely guy is Jamil Muhammad. Jamil Muhammad had a great start to last season. He had a, I think, didn't he have a game? Wasn't San Jose State? He had like two or three tackles for loss, and
oh yeah,
he was really starting to show that he could be someone who could be an impact player for the Trojans after transferring over from Georgia State. And then he went silent. But it wasn't just him.
A lot of guys on that defense.
It was SC's entire defense.
Yeah.
The last 2 months of the year, SC led the country in sacks for the first month, and then after that was AWOL in terms of getting pressure on quarterbacks.
Not to interrupt you too long, but over the three-game stretch, Arizona State, Colorado, and Arizona, he had 8 tackles for loss.
Yeah, that's really good. And then after that, did he have like one?
Well, let's see. One, two. So from Nevada, Stanford, Arizona State, Colorado, Arizona, he had 10 of his 10.5 tackles for loss in that month of games.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
Not coincident. I mean, I don't know, because the level of competition did rise in the second half of the season, but like also those were all wins, and then the rest of the way was a lot of losses.
Sure. Yeah.
So like, you know, coincidence, correlation, not causation, all that kind of stuff. But also, yeah.
Yeah, he had 10 and a half tackles for loss, all in wins. Only 0.5, which came in the Holiday Bowl.
The Holiday Bowl, yeah.
Which came in the last half of the season.
Yeah, which was USC's one of the better defensive performance for USC of the season. So,
yeah, other calls in the chat include Braylon Shelby and Gentry. I think Eric Gentry is already a breakout star. I think he's that sort of a household name in Pac-12 circles.
I think Eric Gentry
will he be in Big Ten circles is the question mark. Yeah, but
he's more well known than like Jalen Smith.
Yes.
I am so fascinated by the linebacker question this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because Easton Mascarenhas-Arnold, you just plug in. I think he's your guy.
Yeah.
And then who plays around him? Who plays alongside him? I think you could make an argument for Eric Gentry. Make an argument for Mason Cobb. I think there are a lot of people who would love to see Rajon Davis be a breakout star.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily personally willing to go there yet, but I think that you have sort of three or four guys for two spots, and you know, I think you can have a rotation of three veteran linebackers that go in and play the majority of the snaps, and that would be pretty normal. But I'm not sure what the division of snaps there will be. So yeah, it could be a situation where Mason Cobb and Eric Gentry are breakout stars because all of a sudden, like, they're able to actually live up to their potential, and that makes them a breakout star.
Yeah, one guy I will still throw out there, Sam Green. I really like Sam Green. He had a big last spring. I think it'll be interesting to see if he can sort of do anything. PV and Shelby also, as were mentioned, guys on the defensive line. What is Nate Clifton, the Vandy transfer? What can he bring to the Trojans that way as well? Elijah Hughes played a ton of time last year as a true freshman on the defensive line. Does that give him a head start?
Elijah Hughes is actually glad you brought him up because I think he has breakout star potential, and if Elijah Hughes is a breakout star, then I think it would be safe to say that USC is having a very good season because the defensive line has so many question marks. If you're looking at Elijah Hughes and Bear Alexander sort of holding down the fort there, I think you feel pretty good.
Yes, it's still going to depend on the context of that.
Well,
though.
Yes.
Like, is he the lone bright star on a defense?
I mean,
you know, that's the difference between being the guy who is the breakout star and on a defense that is, you know, all coming together. So, I don't know. We're gonna have to see what the defense can be on the offensive line. Going back to the offense, PFF's Max Chadwick said Jonah Monheim might just be the most underrated offensive lineman in the country. You agree?
I think he's worthy of a lot of praise. And Ramamurthy said we need a breakout star on the offensive line. And I don't know that Jonah Monheim counts because he is considered one of the top returning offensive linemen. Funny because PFF has him as one of their top returning offensive tackles, but he's playing center, so, you know, whatever. But he is somebody who USC really needs to live up to that moniker of an underrated offensive lineman who sort of, I think, in an ideal world, Jonah Monheim has the same trajectory as an Andrew Voorhees, where, you know, he's been good the whole time. Everyone at USC has sort of known this kid can play, and then they get to their sort of redshirt senior, their final season, and they proved their All-American level. That's what I think you want to be looking for from Jonah Monheim. It's going to be difficult because he's playing an entirely new position. The center experiment is going to be fascinating, I've sort of come around to the idea that if given USC's situation at center, if there was no one that USC could bring in as like a transfer, I feel more comfortable with Jonah Monheim being there than like alternatives. So I've sort of made peace with this center thing, but. Greg in the chat says Elijah Page on the offensive line, a great breakout candidate for mm-hmm. USC. USC yeah. needs him actually to be very good. I think the problem on the offensive line is like USC needs all of those guys to be very good. You can't have any misses on that front or you're in trouble. It's gonna be really interesting. But Jonah Monheim anchoring it all sort of gives me peace, at least.
Yeah, well, 100%. Let's go to everyone's favorite segments of the week, folks. It is time for
a big 10 minutes.
Let's learn about the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota Twin Cities, officially the official name, which I had no idea. It was the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Founded in 1851, it is the university itself, as old as the state of California. But here's the craziest part. The university was actually founded before Minnesota was even a state. Seven years before.
That's awesome.
Isn't that nuts? In Minneapolis, they are the Golden Gophers. How did they become the Golden Gophers? Because of a political cartoon. There was a political cartoon in 1857 that sort of mocked a railroad proposal in Minnesota. It had the heads of politicians on gophers. And the name the Gopher State stuck for Minnesota. And so naturally, Gophers became the name of the athletic program.
This is the... by far the best way to get your name is a newspaper had to be involved. And a political cartoon being the thing that did it is like even better than some sports writer deciding that you are.
Right. Just picking a name out of a hat.
Yeah,
or something.
The Spartans. Yeah.
Yeah. Golden Gophers became the moniker from the 1930s when play-by-play announcer Housley Hall, which is a great name.
Beautiful.
Sort of used it to refer to the team's uniforms, which were all gold. They wore everything gold. So they were the Golden Gophers.
A+ mascot origin story, Minnesota. So far, Minnesota's winning. A+. No notes. Perfect.
All right. One weird Minnesota fact. Minnesota is one of two major universities built on the banks of the Mississippi. Can you name the other? It's obvious when you think about it.
Ole Miss.
No, it's LSU.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But just like Iowa's campus, their campus is bisected by that very river.
Look at that.
There is an east bank and a west bank, and that's what they call the two different sides of the campus over in Minnesota. Let's get to the fight song, Minnesota Rouser.
Good name.
Here it goes. Minnesota, hats off to thee. To thy colors true, we shall ever be. Firm and strong, united we are. Rah, 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 for sky, Uma. Rah, 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 rah. Rah, for the U of M. M-I-N-N-E-S-O-T-A. Minnesota. Minnesota. Yay, Gophers.
What is it with Big Ten teams and rah? Like, all of them love a rah.
It's not just Big Ten. Like, everybody, like,
all college football
TCU's
teams
has a bunch rah, of, like, zippity doo dah weird stuff in there.
Rah, rah, rah for Skiuma is,
yeah, and let's talk about fun. Let's talk about Skiuma, though, because Skiuma. It's Minnesota's rallying cry, their version of Fight On or Roll Tide. It was used by Minnesota since 1884, sort of based on a faculty member who was previously at Princeton, who used to go to football practices and yell, "Sis boom ah, Princeton," which is, you know,
the 1800s were weird. An interesting time.
Weird. So anyways, rugby captain at the time, John W. Adams, wanted to make a cheer that had a sort of Minnesota flavor to it. Doesn't have, you know, in it, but Skiuma was born because apparently John W. Adams, when he was a kid, went to a lake where there were native boys from the Dakota tribe that were the Dakota people that were sort of yelling while they were race Skiu, and he thought that was cool. He didn't know what it meant, but thought it was cool. And so Skiuma became the thing, sort of mixing back with what that faculty member, Thomas Peebles, was saying. Great names, by the way, John W. Adams and Thomas Peebles. Mm-hmm. But since then, local sort of Dakota and Lakota, like linguists and historians, have looked into this. They said that Skiu means nothing. nothing of significance.
Like raw.
It could have been sort of misheard. It could have been just somebody yelling like Yahoo, like their version of like Yahoo or something. Also could have been misheard for the words for like try hard or come on, which, you know, kind of fits with what they want Skiuma to be. Let's talk about
It wouldn't be a Big Ten minute without some sort of weird like Native American connection thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have picked the Big Ten to be very Native American focused.
I mean, here we are.
I guess it makes sense. It makes sense. Let's talk about the notable alums who have been Golden Gophers themselves. How about famous musicians Bob Dylan and Tay Zonde?
Tay
Zonde is 42.
I don't know who
Chocolate
this.
Rain.
Oh, okay.
Do 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 Chocolate Rain. He's 42. How about actor Henry Fonda was a gopher? Robert Gore, the creator of Gore-Tex. You know about Gore-Tex?
Yes.
Yeah, Robert Gore.
Good stuff.
He got his master's at Minnesota. Here's one that was straight from the Wikipedia page. Quote, Walter Palmer, dental surgeon, known for killing a protected lion in Zimbabwe's Hwange National Park.
That I remember that controversy. I think it was in high school when that happened.
A weird thing to have on your notable alums, but okay.
We've established that notable alum pages also are odd things.
About former USC president James Zumberg, who preceded Stephen Sample.
There you go.
He was the president in the 80s.
A USC connection.
Wrestler and UFC guy Brock Lesnar. Minnesota, the state of hockey, of course. Bunch of hockey people. 9 members of the Miracle on Ice team, including Herb Brooks, the head coach.
The least surprising thing you've said so far.
Yes. Trade deadline news generator, Thomas Vanek, if you know, you know. Famous hot dog eater, of course, Phil Kessel. Baseball Hall of Famers, Paul Molitor and Dave Winfield were gophers. Basketball Hall of Famer, Kevin McHale. Football Hall of Famer, Bronco Nagurski. And then there's vice presidents, Herbert Humphrey, of, you know, of the Metrodome fame. I saw this. I'm like, Herbert Humphrey. Oh, the Metrodome guy. It's the Metrodome guy. He was also the VP under LBJ. And Walter Mondale, who's the VP under Jimmy Carter. Alicia, what is your perception of Minnesota fans?
Again.
You got one?
Again, I don't got it. All I know is that they were like happy when it sounded like PJ Fleck was in consideration for the UCLA job, and
yeah.
I kind of liked their reaction to that.
Well, remember it was a Minnesota message board guy that broke SC going to the Big Ten?
Oh, was it a Minnesota guy?
Yeah, I believe it was Minnesota. Well. When I think of Minnesota, though, I think of off-brand USC uniforms,
yeah.
Which, folks, we have to talk about their new uniforms. It is very upsetting. Nike has done the thing. You know, we talk about the Robinson stripes. Nike has given them the Robinson stripes jerseys. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm throwing it up now, the picture. Look at these things.
They're so perfect.
Look how beautiful they are.
This is proof of concept. We've been talking forever about Nike should give USC back should do throwback uniforms. You don't have to change the uniform completely because there's nothing wrong with USC's current jerseys. They're classic.
So good.
But do a throwback with the Robinson stripes in the modern shoulder thing that we've seen from Ohio State and a lot of other places. And this is the Robinson stripes. This is it. Put it cardinal and gold.
Yeah.
And you got it.
You know who's the head coach in Minnesota when they wore those in the 80s? Mm. Lou Holtz. USC Minnesota Memories. The Trojans lead the series 6-1-1. Of course, it's one of the few Big Ten schools USC has not faced in the Rose Bowl. Robert Woods sort of owns the series for me. He had a kickoff return for a touchdown as a true freshman in 2010 in Minnesota. And then he had a school record 17 catches in the season opener in 2011, a game that was sealed by an interception with Torrin Harris in the final minute. The next USC-Minnesota game this October in Minnesota, October 5th. Of course, you mentioned P.J. Fleck. They are led by P.J. Fleck going into his seventh year. Rode the boat, sort of his mantra for enduring, coined after the death of his newborn son. And so it's been a saying that followed him from Western Michigan on to Minnesota. The Gophers last year, 6-7, they did go to a bowl game after going 5-7 during the regular season. P.J. Fleck on the hot seat. Won 11 games a few years ago in 2019, got to the Big Ten championship game, but they sort of have fallen off since. But 15 returning starters makes this year a make-or-break year for the Gophers after a pair of 9-win seasons in 21 and 22. 24, I think, is sort of the big make-or-break for P.J. Fleck, and that's 10 minutes on the University of Minnesota Twin Cities.
Didn't quite hit that one. Had to wait a little bit of a beat there.
Yeah. Close enough. But let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
Let's go to messages we got about last week's show. We got a Discord message from Kyle that says, I agree with Michael considering the Trojan horse debacle. Trojans aren't beating any Hellenistic societies. Knights with more recent technology and fighting skills would beat Spartans, who would beat Trojans.
I still maintain that the Spartans as a sort of militaristic society would beat Knights and would beat Trojans. Personally, we have gotten a text message from our buddy Jake from the What's Bruin show, Psychic What's Bruin show.
Mm-hmm.
He has thoughts about this, so we're going to have him on for a future episode, and we are most certainly going to address this. He is obsessed with the classics.
You know the thing that went viral like 6 months ago about like ask your boyfriend about
the Roman Empire.
Roman Empire, yeah.
Yeah.
Jake is the guy who's like, oh, I think about it every breakfast or whatever it is.
No, Jake listens to like podcasts and stuff.
Who are the people who listen to podcasts?
And does stuff like that, yeah.
People actually listen to podcasts?
I would be way more informed about things in general if the podcast, I listen to a lot of podcasts. If the podcasts I listen to were educational, instead I just sort of like binge true crime and movie podcasts.
Like a true white woman, yeah. YouTube comment we got from Hambo. Hey guys, we played Michigan State in the 1990 John Hancock Bowl, the Sun Bowl. It was a 17-16 loss, Todd Marinovich's last game. I was a freshman in the TMB, and it was an epic battle of the bands. You're right, I'm an idiot. I missed it last week when we were talking about Michigan State. SC has lost three straight to Michigan State. So that'll be something that SC will be trying to fix when they get into the Big Ten. I think next year SC plays Michigan State. Let's get to a Discord message we got from Tim in LA. I'm sure reasonable people can disagree, but who am I kidding? This is college football, but what are the chances on Mike Leach's ineligibility to join the Hall of Fame as a coach since his winning percentage is 0.596, one below the criteria of 60%. Should there be some wiggle room because he died before the team's bowl win, or are the rules the rules?
First, I want to shout out Greg for asking the question about the Spartans-Trojans mascot war, just before we forget that one. The Mike Leach Hall of Fame ineligibility thing is very, 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 very unnecessarily stupid.
Yeah.
The criteria of 60% is a completely arbitrary, pulled out of nowhere number. It is completely meaningless.
Well, so is the 10 years thing.
This is what I was going to get to. The 10 years thing that's going to keep Pete Carroll from being in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's arbitrary. It is meaningless. It has nothing to do with the spirit. What they're trying to do there is to prevent a coach who's been there forever but's bad, like who has a 40% winning percentage or whatever, from just getting in. Like, but like, shouldn't at a certain point, shouldn't you trust your voters enough to gatekeep who should and shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame well enough that you don't have to have this stupid 60% criteria or 10 years, like, so that you don't have to deal with this thing where somebody is 5.596, or like Pete Carroll is 9 years instead of 10, and you're leaving people who, if you did a straw poll of anybody, should Mike Leach be in the Hall of Fame, should Pete Carroll be in the Hall of Fame, everyone I think would say yes. Significant to the sport, yes. So just put him in. Just put him in. This is stupid.
It is stupid. And I the weird thing is, first of all, a coach with a winning percentage under 60% is never getting in today's generation of what we consider a good coach, right? Yeah. Like, you look at it and look at the guys who, like, I think of Rich Brooks, I want to say Rich Brooks might be in the College Football Hall of Fame. I don't know for sure, but like his name is literally on Autzen Stadium. It's Rich Brooks Field at Autzen Stadium or whatever it is, right? He's not in the College Football Hall of Fame. I just looked it up because he's got a losing record, but his name is on the field. And you look at his record, he never had more than six wins until like his 13th season. Like, the coaches back in the day used to be allowed to coach forever because there wasn't this sort of, you know, bloodthirst that fans had about getting rid of a coach really quickly. So coaches were allowed to last forever. And so guys like Rich Brooks, who, I'm not saying he was a bad coach, but like, he didn't have the production. He wouldn't last 3 years in today's game, unfortunately, got to last forever, right? So the guys you're trying to eliminate are guys from yesteryear. Those guys don't exist anymore. So there's no need to have this thing. Secondly, Mike Leach belongs in the College Football Hall of Fame because of his influence on the game of college football. It has nothing to do with his wins and losses. He needs to be in there because of what he did to innovate the game of college football and the offenses and all those things. Like, he played a vital role. When you tell the story of college football, especially this century, you have to mention Mike Leach. He should be there. This is one of those stupid things that doesn't need to be there. The other thing is that for players, it's All-American status. You have to be All-American, right?
which also...
I get, because it's difficult, because there's just so many possible guys, but at the same time, it's all...
Here's a solution there, is you have to be, like, you could have these criteria as, like, a general criteria, but also have, right, like, have an opening by which people who don't fit that it's rigid criteria. Yeah, so, like, you can say All-American, and let's say the threshold by which you get into the Hall of Fame is higher if you weren't an All-American or if you didn't have a 60% in terms of like voting.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that because then you could have the obvious people who don't fit your criteria get in because the only reason they get in is because it's like everyone, it's a unanimous decision kind of thing. So,
and there's different types of All-Americans too. We've seen it at SC, right? There's guys on the wall who are on there because I say this as someone who produces content on the internet, but because some random publication online said they're an All-American.
Yeah.
And then there's guys who were, you know, unanimous consensus guys who, like a Reggie Bush who was on there, you know, every possible way, right?
And like, the other thing about being an All-American is, like, you could be the third best player. Like, you could be the third best center for 4 years of your career. But if there were two other centers in any given year that were on a bigger team or had more, you know, were more in front of the camera than you, or sort of a bigger personality or played for a bigger team, like, you could get boxed out of an All-American team but still have the career of a Hall of Famer.
Right. Well, we talked about Drew Brees is one of those guys who's ineligible for the College Football Hall of Fame, even though you look at everything that he did, the million records. When we talk about Purdue in the Big Ten Minute, is probably going to have to mention all the million records that Drew Brees has, right?
Yeah.
He's ineligible because he played at the same time as a bunch of other dudes.
Yeah. And it's silly. It's silly.
It's really dumb. Really, really dumb. Mm-hmm. Let's get to a question we got today on YouTube from Greg. Which one do you think has the best chance to be a Heisman finalist from SC's roster this year? It's got to be the quarterback, right?
I think Miller Moss.
If it's not Miller Moss, Zachariah Branch?
Yes, just because you could have the receiving special team sort of all around kind of a factor.
You could put together like a Marquise Lee type season.
I mean, I suppose Woody Marks, if he, given the position, it is Heismanable.
Right.
I don't know that he'll
love
get
that term.
Heismanable. I don't know that he'll get the touches that would give him this opportunity, but theoretically, if he has just a bunch of highlight plays and USC is winning games against Michigan and LSU and Notre Dame, and he's,
because I choose not to run,
tearing off 80-yard runs or doing like Reggie Bush like things in terms of just having highlight reel kind of stuff, he has to be a possibility, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to it, the way you win the Heisman these days is by being a quarterback, and being a Lincoln Riley quarterback already puts you ahead of the curve. So
yeah, 100%. Greg also says, what are your thoughts of Reggie Bush's comment that he thinks USC will absolutely have their 2004 title reinstated? I have a hot take on this.
What is that?
That I do not care.
I was,
because the title was never stripped to me.
Yeah,
the AP never stripped the title.
I was like, gonna say
that title still exists.
It's
the trophy. The trophy is not there, but that the AP title was never stripped.
Everyone knows who won the national title that year. I don't know that. Unlike Reggie's Heisman, which he was fighting hard for, and there was sort of a movement behind it, I don't know where the movement to get USC official recognition for that title comes from. So I think that's the biggest reason why I don't see it happening, and I don't need it to happen. I would love to see it happen. I would absolutely love it. I just do not think this is going to be a priority for the NCAA or USC. Yeah. Unless it comes from...
I mean, getting the crystal ball back would be cool.
I mean, unless it comes specifically from in response to the lawsuit that Reggie Bush is fighting. Like, if it's a direct response to that, I could see it happening. But I don't necessarily have, like, the connection between those two things either. So, no, I don't expect it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. We're going to be back next week, talk more USC football, of course. Join us next week. Who's the? I gotta pull up the little list here. Who's next week? Is next week Purdue? No, next week is Nebraska. Oh, Purdue's still a ways off. This is the crazy thing about the Big Ten. They're in alphabetical order, but they're so close. They're all next to each other.
So it's
I's and M's and N's and O's and P's.
Nebraska, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, and then Purdue is like one of the last teams we do.
Yeah, Purdue is the third to last. Yeah. We are now halfway through, by the way.
Nice.
Which is very exciting. So Nebraska next week, followed by Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, and then Wisconsin. And of course, we're not going to do UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, because you already know about them. You know about Sons of Westwood, how they stole the fight song from UCLA, and blah 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 blah.
From Cal.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Same difference. Same difference. All right, we'll be back next time. Be sure to follow us over on TikTok. We're on TikTok. Follow us on the TikTok before it gets banned. Follow us on that TikTok. Follow us on YouTube. We're putting out YouTube shorts as well. I put out a video about the Minnesota jerseys and how I wish SC had those jerseys. You put out a video last week about, what do you put out a TikTok about?
The Notre Dame.
The Notre Dame rivalry. Yeah, yeah. And then over on YouTube proper, we put out a video ranking USC's wide receivers. Coming up will be the running backs and the quarterbacks and so on and so forth. So check us out for those. Be sure you're subscribed, like the video, all that stuff. Give us your reviews over on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend about the pod. I don't know. Whatever it is. Until next time, we will see ya. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.